Chapter 16. 6th of January, 2057. 0100 GMT. Jim Boyd's cabin temperature had indeed fallen below freezing about midnight, so Tash learned, following the feeds on her phone. In Government House, the long night stayed quiet, relatively. Quiet for Tash and Grace, anyhow. They had both supported Fred Bowles, as he in turn helped prepare the English Federation's representative to the FIS Security Council for that level of meeting. And with that done, right now Fred was locked in with his own subordinates, advisers and peers, including the chief scientific advisor, the chief medical officer, police and military chiefs, considering next steps. Tash and Grace could only wait for a call. She wondered if everybody else was holding their breath, waiting to see if this strange nightmare of cold and dark would end. Everybody in the world waiting. A little after one, she and Grace made a decision to attempt to get some sleep. Together they made their way through the cool warren of corridors that was House, a crowded warren tonight with so many people working over, and found the small overnight accommodation suite they had been allocated, two bunk beds, a minuscule bathroom, and a coffee pot, empty. They agreed one would try to sleep while the other covered the phones, taking turn and turn about. In the end, Grace, who among her other superpowers seemed to possess an ability to thrive on a lack of sleep, volunteered to take the first shift awake. Some animal part of Tash was glad of it, so Tash changed, washed, and cleaned her teeth with ministry-supplied brush and toothpaste, while Grace went out hunting down coffee refills. When she lay down, Tash felt too wired to sleep, too exhausted to stay awake, but she was determined to lie here, asleep or not, while gradually her thoughts crumbled. She did sleep, but only lightly and in fragments, kept waking up fretting, furtively checked her phones out of sight of Grace, mostly checking for news about Jim Boyd. At around 2 a.m., Jim, still cheerful, or putting on that face, still compos mentis, was monitoring his own heartbeat, finding it high and reporting the results. "I'm doing what I can," he said through a throat tight with cold. "I came out here in my damn underwear, so I'm improvising, pulling on every stray bit of clothing I can dig out. I'm looking at the insulation we have cladding the walls behind the hygiene panels. I'll get at that. I know the theory. My body is doing what it should be doing. I'm shivering, heart pumping, my body burning up stores of energy in a last-ditch attempt to keep my inner core warm. My vital organs. I'm still wearing my med sensors. We're supposed to wear that stuff inside the storm shelter, so anybody who chooses can follow my vital signs. Maybe I can provide some data on the advance of hypothermia in a healthy young male. Youngish. Even if I don't recommend you make the same mistake I did." Amid the grand spectacle of a whole world shivering in the dark, Tash, along with much of the human race, found the small human story of Jim Boyd stuck out in space utterly compelling. Hardly surprising for her, since he was the fiancé of a friend, though Tash had never met him personally. But it was also a neat, self-contained story in its own right, on a night of overwhelming events. Maybe it was always this way, a means for mere humans to comprehend such immense disasters, Saving Private Ryan, about a survivor of the Second World War, refugee tears, about a survivor of the 2030s border clashes between China and Russia, a phase of long-lasting, slow-burning conflict in which Xi's own father, conscripted, had been killed. Saving Jim Boyd. Except there seemed no way to do that. Tash fell asleep to the calm murmur of his voice. When she woke, Boyd seemed more confused.
"I'm trying to take my damn heartbeat, but now it says it's slower than normal, and that can't be so."
It was 4 a.m., Tash saw. The Russian mission controllers of Almirich weren't releasing the predicted cabin temperature any longer. It had to be far below zero. She sent another sympathy message to Xi on the lodestone, but even if it ever got through the habitat's mission controllers, as with its predecessors, she got no reply. Tash made to get out of bed, but when she opened the door to the tiny lounge area, Grace, sitting there, shook her head.
"Nothing's happening. Get some rest while you can, because you never know when you'll get another chance. Listen to an old soldier."
"I thought you were an old Marine."
"Classified." She was right, of course.
The morning would see chaos and mountains of work, come daylight or darkness, sunshine or frost. Besides, some deep, frightened part of her, she suspected, just longed to escape back into the oblivion of sleep. She went back to bed. Her next awakening was 7 a.m. Surprised she had slept so late and apparently deeply, she bundled out to the lounge, quickly paging through the relevant feeds on her phone. The sun was still absent. That was the first thing she checked. The second was the latest report from the Almirich. Not from Jim, but his crewmates. A recorded summary on repeat. "It got worse around 6 a.m. UTC, which was a common astronaut's standard timing, the same as GMT, Tash knew. "We couldn't reach him. We were locked in. He was in a rage. He ranted at us, the soup, God, you name it. Then he started ripping off his clothes, what little he was wearing, just layers of stuff he had found lying around in the cabin, and bundles of insulation from the walls. Even his med sensors ripped right off. He said he was too hot. Stuck in here, we couldn't stop him. Then he moved out of sight, and we don't know where he is now, what he's doing." Grace walked over. She glanced at the feed. "Look at those body temperatures. It's over for him." Tash longed to return to sleep. She dumped her phone and headed for the tiny bathroom.